Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got a great show. For those who always ask about the music on the intro, that is Indian in the Machine with Dieter. So if you want to Google that, you could probably check that one out. It might be IndianInTheMachine.com, I'm not sure, but we'll put that up on the site. But, you know, this, I know his albums are on sale on his website, and he's got some great, great music. But that being said, we've got some crazy stuff. We've got the sun just blasting away at us lately. And we are going through this solar cycle 24. And so, you know, it's hang on to your hats. It's going to get real interesting here. The guest we have tonight is Neil Kramer, the infamous Neil Kramer. And being at his workshop today here at East SETI, I know why so many people respect the man, are just in love with his work, because it just cuts through the crap and brings things down to basics. And you can really see where, you know, your belief system, you know, has a lie in it. Because whenever you have a belief, there's always a lie in the middle. And how we came to these belief systems and how we need to step out of them and find out who we truly are. So just an amazing workshop, some incredible insights. And without any further ado, I want to welcome Neil on the show. Neil, are you with us?
James, thank you for having me here. It's good to be with you again this evening.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to have to start charging your rent here pretty soon. But
obviously, actually, sounds great, yeah.
Yeah, I love having you here, and you're always a welcome guest here at East SETI, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the evening sky watches and what you bring to the party out there.
Great, thank you. Yeah.
What I wanted to get into is basically your message, and basically, you know, we have an hour show. I don't know if you want to open it up for questions later or callers later, but we'll see how that goes. We've got so much information to bring out, you know, but, you know, I thought I'd just turn it over to you and, you know, let you give your message and what you'd like the audience to hear.
Sure. Well, I think, taking some of the principles from the, material that we were sharing today, one of my sort of central messages is that, a lot of the sacred knowledge that we have available to us as human beings and as people who present ourselves in the world to unfold and to know and to grow and to expand, a lot of that information is kind of like hidden and is not necessarily at our fingertips in a way that it used to be in times gone by. So to some extent, what I'm trying to do is synthesize that and bring a blend of mysticism and philosophy and spirituality and so on, and put it forward in a way that people can access it from a, you know, broad range of backgrounds and disciplines. And obviously, you know, from a personal point of view, my fulfillment in that comes knowing that some people are inspired and that message came at the right time for their journey, and it adds to what groundwork they've already achieved. And then they go away and develop that. So there's always a certain element for me where you're sharing, you know, quite a sort of broad range of material, but you're actually running a thread through it to say, for example, today we were talking about European mystery school traditions, and we were talking about particularly Helena Blavatsky's formulation of that and how that ties into understanding previous civilizations that are, you know, been considered in a sort of mythological context, like Atlantis and Hyperborea and stuff. And we were looking at other people who've been interested in that in more modern times, like, you know, the Germans, for example, and, you know, Rudolf Hess being interested in that and Heinrich Himmler being interested in that, and why it is that that is of such interest at such peculiar times in history. So, yeah, we were throwing a few stories out there as well, you know, some kind of like things to sort of titillate the psyche in a way, but there's like a sort of, you know, cheeky purpose behind that to show that it's not just curiosity that drives people to look at this stuff. There is actually something significant there, and my understanding is that it's that sacred knowledge is actually from, I would say, a single source, and as it sort of trickles down through the aeons, through the ages, it finds its way into all kinds of different traditions and schools, and you know, the Rosicrucians and the Templars and the Freemasons, the Golden Dawn, the Theosophists, and then previous to that, you know, the Greeks, Sumerians, the Egyptians, etc. So there's so many different schools that put their own lens over that information and give their own take on it. And yet when you trace it back, you know, we were talking today about the chronology of that, there is quite a clear timeline. And if you start to break that down, you can say, well, the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims, you know, again, start to wash away some of the ritual and some of the cultural paraphernalia of that. And their message came from this, you know, single source that, you know, you can trace back in some fashion to ancient Sumeria about, you know, 4,500 BC, which is, you know, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is of great interest. So we were discussing the people who do choose to worship in modern Christian paradigms, and particularly in Britain and America, that's fine. But let us look at the roots of these things. Let's examine the origins of these things, because therein lies some, you know, very interesting history that understanding that lineage gives us a better kind of understanding of what we've actually got in front of us today. And it makes sense of some of the apparently chaotic things that are going on, and it makes sense of some of the meltdowns and some of the brokenness in the system. And, you know, that sacred wisdom, you might think, well, what's that got to do with anything? That is directly instructing a lot of these things and a lot of the sort of shenanigans that goes on in the background at the parapolitical level, or the, you know, exopolitical level even in some cases. You can start to trace why that is and how that works. So I always seek, as far as possible, to bring a degree of clarity into this. And the joy of doing that in a workshop environment, conferences are great, but it's a very diverse audience. In a workshop environment, although you still have that diversity, you have more of a concentration of focus. You know, people have made a sort of special effort to come out. It's 2 days of pretty sort of intense material, really. There's a lot of stuff to share, about 12 hours of material. So, you know, you can really afford to kind of go in deep and also build in a bit of flexibility as well. So tomorrow, for example, one of the sessions, you know, is going to be pretty much steered by the participants in the audience. So that adds a bit of spontaneity and a bit of interest into it as well. So, yeah, no, it's been a really good good experience today.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, I love the way you're breaking down the system and showing people, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are demonstrating and holding picket signs and demonstrating against the government, not really realizing that the government really isn't in control, that there's levels upon levels upon levels. There's like a hierarchy going up to just a few people, and then from there it goes to some non-physical entities. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's excuse me. It's really mapping out those layers of control, and people who are familiar with what I do might have come across this before, but to really break that down and say, well, there is a governmental layer, but there's also this realpolitik layer, which is really, you know, the sort of typified by the Henry Kissinger era and also some of the sort of British politicians around the time, which won't go into detail now because they're largely American audience perhaps. But and then above that, you have a parapolitical layer, and then above that, you know, I'm saying there is an Illuminist layer. And, of course, Illuminism, people immediately associate with the sort of, you know, 1776 founding of the Illuminati movement and, you know, all the rest of it, Adam Weishaupt and everything. But I'm using Illuminism in terms of how they stratify knowledge and how they use the initiatory system to break knowledge down so only certain bits of it are shared with certain people at certain times. And then above that, and particularly with this, you know, very free-thinking and open audience here, I can afford to explore the sort of what I would refer to as the extra or ultra-dimensional layer as well. So, you know, there are ultra-terrestrial experiences and intelligences involved in that. And I think it's proper to stretch out and kind of stick my neck out a bit and say that, because it wouldn't be in my integrity just to say, okay, it's just about humans, it's just about men. I think that's a very narrow view. So one of the other things today is we have been able to talk about that a little bit more and talk about some of those intelligences and that model of control. You know, you can kind of pass by that after 25 minutes, and it really leads you in to understanding this construct of these seven-dimensional spaces in an organic sense. And I'm saying, well, let's not get hypnotized by just the third density and just that three-dimensional space. Let's understand that there are movements of energy, there are configurations, there are intelligences that move above and beyond that. And I think it would be very short-sighted of one to just put that to one side and say, well, we can't talk about that because it's too odd, and one or two people might kind of throw the toys out of the pram, you know. So we don't really want to talk about that. So I think, well, a workshop, if you can't dive into detail with, frankly, people who are eager and enthusiastic for that stuff, then where can you do it? So, again, one of the nice things about doing that kind of work is that it's more focused and you can delve into it a little bit more. So part of that control analysis is to say, well, if there is control on those levels, in those layers, where is it being directed from and how does it function? And that, again, leads you back to this knowledge of Sumerian culture and the Atlantean culture and so on, and saying there was apparently a higher technology that was available that we've lost contact with. So there is this ancient world, literally, of a certain epoch that we don't really have anything to show for, we don't really have anything to see for it, but there does appear to be some people, if there was this crustal shift or if there was some sort of continental cataclysm, those people dispersed and some of them took this sacred knowledge with them. And this is, you know, 400-year-old information in recent times, and obviously it goes a lot further back than that. But there were mystics writing about this very thing, but until recently, any talk of previous civilizations with superior technology and superior administration was, again, the talk of lunacy, really. So you have to be sensitive in how you approach that. So I tried to walk into that today in quite a structured way and say, well, let's look at the timelines. Let's look who's been putting time and effort into that. Let's think about why you know, the German Socialist Party that, you know, became the Nazi movement from sort of 1933 to 1939 were diving into, you know, this esoteric research, spending an awful lot of money and resources doing it at a very busy time, to say the least, in German history. Why were they doing that? So, you know, you can trace the weight of that and the serious and the impact of that by looking at, you know, to put it crudely, who's spending money on doing it. So we discussed that a little bit today, and I think that was quite enlightening.
Yeah. You know, in ancient times, I looked at some old, you know, hieroglyphs, and they had all the different levels mapped out. And on the lowest levels, and in ancient times, they called them the archons, were like the, like kind of demonic, reptilian grays or whatever, on these lower levels. And then as you move up, you'd have some humans, you know, being kind of influenced by those levels, you know, acting out some very low frequency emotions and you know, a lot of anger and hostility or separation or things like that. And then on the next level up, you'd have, you know, just your everyday people going about life, you know, doing their farming and growing their food and, you know, raising families and things like that. And then the next level up were the enlightened humans that were trying to better themselves and, you know, connect with the higher dimensional beings. And then above that were like the demigods or the god beings. And it's really interesting having this laid out in ancient times, but those times are just as relative today, because that same thing is going on where these people who are very self-serving or controlling and want everybody to serve them, basically, you know, they're totally interested in power over others. And however they can get that, even if it means doing demonic ritual or whatever to bring that in, and sacrificing care and all these other rituals they do, it's very clear that it's just as prevalent today as it was in the ancient times.
Yeah, it is, and I think that's a relevant and appropriate observation to say that there does appear to be, as you put it, you know, there are some people using so-called, in parenthesis, satanic methods, to leverage, you know, people's root portal and run energy through that and use all kinds of, you know, insidious means to make that happen. And they will use any mechanisms to pull whatever energy in they can to give them the best advantage. And I think that, you know, suggesting that it's not just about weapons and about hardware, but it is actually this sacred knowledge kind of usurps all that in terms of the weight of what it can do and how it's a game changer. So if you've got technology that can transport things from one point to another instantly, if you can change, you know, the physics, you're playing at a totally different level then. And I think that begins to answer why there's still this, you know, very kind of voracious protectiveness about that information. And it's not a doom and gloom picture entirely, because although there are people hiding that for the wrong reasons, there's also people protecting that information for the right reasons. So I think it does us well to remember that, you know, the dark forces in the world who are playing that polarity game, A, it's a temporary one, and B, they haven't got all the answers, and they certainly haven't got all the power. And periodically that power does shift, and right now I think we're starting to experience that. So that illusion of democracy is beginning to crack. And even the, you know, staunch Democrats, staunch Republicans over here are starting to just think, hang on a second, this is all a load of you-know-what, isn't it? What's the alternative? You know, why is it like that? So even, you know, the man in the street, a more mainstream audience, are starting to put the pieces together and think, there's another layer to this whole thing, and we don't really talk about that very much. And maybe it's time we did. So, yeah, I think that's very important to look at.
Yeah, definitely shed a light on that. I noticed one of the examples you brought up, you said something like a couple million people were protesting against the war in Iraq, saying don't go. The vast majority of the people over in England were saying, you know, do not go to this war. Do not get involved. And the same thing happened in the States. They were doing polls in the States, and 94% of the people were saying, we don't want to go to war. We don't want this war. We don't want to be involved in it. But both governments went to war. So that's a classic example of how we think we have a government that's, you know, by and for the people, but it really isn't. It's actually serving another agenda, that there's other levels above that are really running the show, multiple levels that have nothing to do with the will of the people.
Yeah, and that's a very uncomfortable thought for a lot of people, and it creates this, you know, so-called cognitive dissonance where it's such an unpleasant thought. It's the same process whereby people will not look at the events of 9/11 and will not look at that data because they think, okay, well, let's imagine that that was a planned attack and it wasn't 19 Arab hijackers. And, you know, actually, just as we're on the subject, I don't think it was an inside job as such. I think it's a bit more complicated than that. But the point is that, again, the regular guy or girl in the street looking at that information, they think, well, hang on a second, if that's not the way we're told it was, that means that everything is a lie, really. The whole of democracy is a sham. It's just a very thin veneer. And as soon as you start to sort of peel that back, the whole thing cracks and falls off the wall, and you just think, well, you know, where does that leave us? So there's a problem for a lot of people because they don't necessarily have, you know, a spiritual discipline or, you know, a certain level of psychological balance. They're not versed in the esoteric. They don't see the deeper picture. So if all your information is coming through the Washington Post and CNN, then you're in a very precarious position, because if that's pulled away from you and somebody persuades you that it's all nonsense, you know, where do you go from there? You step off one train and just fall off the tracks and roll down a hill and land in a ditch, you know, and that people don't want to do that. They want to step off one train and jump right onto another one. Sometimes that's not possible. So part of the work that I do is to say, well, the secret of this is your own work, is your own inner work, because that does provide you with what I would call, you know, sovereign empowerment to say, well, yeah, maybe there are things going on in the world that aren't the way we thought they were, and certainly not the way we'd like them to be, but there's a higher purpose for that as well. And it's kind of like we talked today, for example, about, you know, yuga cycles and Mayan consciousness cycles, We talked about Blavatsky's concepts of the root races and all these different epochs of time mapped out in different ways. But one thing that was clear throughout that is that there are cycles of light and shadow. And even the shadow side has a part to play. And it's what I would refer to as mapping negative polarity. To say, well, you need to see how bad it can get. You need to see how unconscious the world can get in order to actually restructure it. Because you have to deconstruct the thing first, get back down to the foundations, wipe them away, and then build again. So to some degree, you have to go right to the start again. That doesn't mean going back to the Stone Age and just, you know, starting from total day one scratch. It means reevaluating everything. And that begins, you know, in consciousness, really. And so people who are not familiar and are not accustomed to considering and contemplating their own consciousness, that's kind of like a big ask in many ways. So you have to approach it sensitively to be inclusive. So, you know, the audience today, as you know, was very broad, lots of different ages and backgrounds and ethnicities, genders, expectations. And that's good because it means that a broad section of people, if that is representative of people who are interested in this, are thinking there's something wrong and, you know, maybe this guy has looked at it and maybe we can learn something. But as I say, also the other thing is that the big win really with events like this is, like, you know, you step off the stage and you have a break or you have lunch or you finish for the day, that narrative, that conversation continues and proliferates out and extends and develops without me entirely, which is very satisfying for me. So somebody may say, well, that was pretty interesting, but yeah, this is I liked what he said about that, but I think that this is interesting. What do you think about that? And I say, well, my experience was with a different system, and the whole thing starts to spread and starts to evolve, basically. So part of my role, as far as possible, and I think in a little while we might pass the line to some of the people who've been involved in this today, just to get some other perspectives. But part of my role is one of inspiration and is one of empowerment, to say this is a group effort, and to some degree we're all in the same boat here. We're all doing the same thing, so let's not worry too much about putting that, passing the baton to, you know, half a dozen or a few hundred people. It's actually everybody. So we all go back to our regular lives, however regular or strange or wonderful or miserable they may be, and we start to change them with what we learn together and what we share together. And that's the key thing for me, is that what goes on here at this learning center at your facility, that spreads out. And I'm sure from your own point of view, that's part of the satisfaction of doing this work, that you know that it continues after you close the gates, you know?
Mm-hmm. It is very satisfying to me to bring people like yourself and all of these other just brilliant minds together. Okay. Here. Yeah. And then document their information and make it available on DVDs, which are going out to the world. And I know that, you know, one positive thought outweighs, you know, a million negative ones. And if we can just get enough people to, you know, wake up and smell the coffee as to what's going on and how we could live a much more evolved life, you know, living in harmony with each other and the planet, then kudos to that. So again, you know, I can't thank you enough for playing your part in this, and there's a lot of people playing parts in this, but I love the part you're playing and how you break it all down and people can see through the layer upon layer upon layer of confusion and chaos that's been laid out to the core issues, you know, what's really going on.
Yeah, and that's part of the responsibility of what people like ourselves do, which is we each have a different angle on this jewel of knowledge. We each see a different facet of it. And, you know, what James Gilliland specializes in, you know, Neil Cramer specializes in another area, and there's, you know, all these different men and women doing different things. And when you start to put those things together, you start to form this more complete model of what we're actually looking at here. So I think it is relevant, and particularly, you know, that when you go to conferences and stuff, and I've been fortunate to go to quite a number of high-quality ones, and you start to think, well, you know, the actual conference itself is kind of like an organism, and it brings together, you know, just the right recipe, just the right blend, just the right level of consciousness in terms of the speakers. And obviously there's some, the organizers obviously have some control over that, but sometimes events sort of like to take their own course. And so, you know, for example, you know, my personal movements over the last few years, you know, just in spring last year, I was living in Washington for a number of months and, you know, looking for an opportunity to come back up here. So, you know, it's funny that after the conference in June, you know, we found a house kind of like, you know, down the road, really. So it's really useful for us. And that then affects, you know, my writing for my book, which is, you know, don't want to plug that or whatever right now, but, you know, that's on the horizon very soon. And, you know, these things all kind of fit together. And then, of course, you meet people here. And, you know, I met some lady from England today, you know, did some one-on-one coaching work on Friday, which was excellent. So you form these new connections that have meaning, and actually, you know, you can see the results of what you're doing, and those, that wisdom gets passed on. So just as somebody passes it to me, I pass it on to someone else. So definitely having that breadth of knowledge in one place. And as I say, it's not just the people on the stage who get up and, you know, blab for a few hours with a microphone pinned to the shirt. It's the conversation that takes place around that as well. And frankly, even for myself, it's what you would have, you know, sat around the fireside or sat in a cafe or having a coffee with somebody. Well, that's where some of the real gems get exchanged, really. But yeah, we thought it might be a good idea to bring in one or two other people. And there's a guy here whose name is
Greg.
And Greg, we thought it might be nice just to get a perspective. We've got two or three people with us, actually. So if that's okay with you, James, you know, we can. I'll let you perhaps ask a question of Greg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's As You Wish Talk Radio, so it's as you wish.
Good evening, guys. Great to be with you here.
Oh, great to have you.
Hi,
on the
James.
Show.
We're upstairs here. Thanks, Neil, and enjoyed your talk today.
Mm-hmm. You know, the audience, just to let people know, you know, who you are. You have Jay Seti, right, in Japan?
Yeah, exactly. First inspired by some experiences here at East City, maybe about 5 years ago, and yeah, definitely. We're doing this project at Japan Center for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and I think that definitely approaching some of these big ideas in a simple way is a common theme that we're trying to do, what Neil's done so well with his work, and also, you know, trying to outline some of the stuff that's been put out so well in your videos and the material you said here. So I think there's been a real need for this kind of information, as Japan doesn't have a real alternative media happening right now other than blogs and books. So there's not really a net-based alternative media there. And for me, this show, As You Wish, I listen to while I do my laundry on Sunday mornings. So it's been good to keep me going over the last few years over there. And one of the themes today that popped up, which I had caught through inspiration in Neil's lecture, was regarding the phenomenon versus the actual causes, the root causes. And we've hit on this, and you and I just briefly spoke about that today, James, where looking at the disinformation campaign and how it's affected people all around the world, you know, people's reaction and the wrong conclusions about ETs and UFOs in Japan is, you know, the exact same as it is here. And, you know, just seeing people caught in the headlights of just looking at the video and the film evidence and the way it's been presented through media and, you know, TV and movies all these years, it's just a phenomenon loop. You know, it's a feedback loop of just keeping you hooked on the phenomenon. Wouldn't you say that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I think done so well is to hit on more of the root causes and get behind the what's happening, you know, on the inside of the craft or whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't ask the big questions. Okay, we know they're here. They're showing up all over the planet right now, although the media here is trying to ignore it as much as they can. But that's kind of a mute point because they're showing up everywhere. But we have to get beyond that to whether or not they're real to, okay, if, you know, now that we know they're real, who are they and why are they here? And they're not they're afraid to cover those questions. And I think mainly because they don't know and they don't want to look, you know, even high officials and certain agencies that should know don't know. And they come here to try to figure it out. So I think that's quite interesting because it's all about consciousness and rising to the occasion and connecting with these beings, and then they can work with you. But there's really no reason for them to connect with you and give you any kind of knowledge at all if you're not going to do anything with it. And if you're not able to comprehend it, it's they just, you know, allow you to move on and do your everyday work and whatever until you do start asking the big questions and doing your, you know, meditation practices and healing practices.
Totally, exactly. Yeah, I think people are getting ready for it, though, and you know, the whole ETI phenomenon going, I've called it the UFO myth, which is a Shinwa in Japanese, but that's a UFO mythology, is where we're getting away from that and moving into this ETI, that's sort of this new idea. I mean, I've worked very hard in to kind of let people know that, you know, even the term UFO, as it's used in Japanese, it's the exact same thing. It's a neuro-linguistic programming. It's NLP, where it just has all these subconscious nuances attached to it by design, you know, with the use of words. And so we're trying to shift that into describing what this ETI idea would be. And actually, in Japan, they're very sensitive to that, and it's very easy for them to understand because of the Shinto roots, where they have, you know, a neighborhood for a god for every thing in the world, you know, basically. So this the cosmology that's presented so well, Eddie Seti here, is they're just very partial to that, and it's extremely easy for them to understand that, you know, it's not just the ETs. There's a lot of other things that are directly linked to that world. So we've had a lot of luck with you know, people kind of changing their minds about, you know, oh, that's what was really going on. So people are very sensitive there, and we've been having some amazing contact lately as well.
Yeah, I have to say that the group you brought up are just beautiful people, very amazing, you know, people.
Excellent.
And you know, I'm just curious. I didn't have a lot of chance to talk to them, but how are they doing, you know, after, you know, connecting in and experiencing, you know, firsthand these higher dimensional beings?
Yeah, actually, they're actually loving it. So today was, we got in yesterday late, and then today was our first real day to plug in here. We were out in the field at about 5:30 this morning, and had some sightings out. And they're just in between all the stuff going on with the event and the beautiful nature here around at the ranch and around Trout Lake and just in one way or another, you know, this. It's just been unfolding all day. You know, they're just realizing how great this place really is. So yeah, it's. I think this is the first of many groups we'd like to bring over. So it's like a pioneering effort here, and I just feel it's a great convergence. So I'm so happy it all came together here. But for the last event of the year.
Yeah, well, thanks for, you know, your work in making that happen and bridging the gap between, you know, E Seti here and J Seti over in Japan, and, you know, keep up the great work.
My pleasure. Thanks a million. And thanks always for the inspiration, James. Okay, I'm going to pass the phone here.
Okay, so we have another fantastic participant whose name is...
Robert.
Robert.
I actually have a question for Neil. I'd like to bring it to a practical level.
Sure.
Going from the conceptual information to a practical level. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, we are constantly transducing spiritual energy to our body. And that you mentioned, say, that our feelings and our emotions are an integral part of the interdimensional bridging that we're to do. Can you describe or discuss how, on a practical level, on a daily practice, you can actually accelerate that process of tuning into your emotional energies and bridging that trans-dimensional gap?
Sure, yeah, it's funny. We're going to cover this tomorrow, actually, in the workshop. But we talked about a lot of kind of high-level stuff today, some abstract information, and that's going to kind of, like, get more concrete tomorrow. But, yeah, no, it's a really good question, very important point. To a great degree, I think I was suggesting that the emotions, of course, have a physiological aspect in that they, you know, necessary for our survival and our well-being and our procreation and so on. But they also have, as you say, like a sort of trans-dimensional element, and that there's a communication element between, if you like, the higher self or the spirit and the mind, the brain complex, the psyche. And the emotions play a sort of integral role in that. And I think one of the techniques that I have found very useful is that there's a principle of woundedness that I often cover in the sort of one-on-one work that I do. And that is very much something that affects a lot of people. And certainly I have this principle that we each carry, you know, pretty sort of heavy emotional wounds in many ways. And a lot of people, that actually prevents contact at a subtle level with that spiritual self. So where we've experienced traumatic events, particularly between the ages of 0 and 7, and then as young men and women from 7 to 14, things that we wire in as avoidance techniques so we don't repeat that actually go through the rest of our lives pretty much with the same patterning. So, for example, if something has made you close down as a little girl or a little boy, as a 65-year-old man or woman, you can still be doing exactly the same thing, and every time that old wound gets triggered, you go into the same patterns to avoid the same pain. So there are methods to do that, and we'll be discussing some of that to correct that. We'll be discussing some of that tomorrow. And one of them really is the understanding that at the energetic level, you know, people talk about chakras and stuff. A lot of people, I guess, who listen to this show don't have a problem with that. But in the wider audience, people are concerned with that, particularly in the West and particularly in Europe, more than many other places, I would say. And I say, well, yeah, the reason we can't lay our hands on them is because they're not sort of three-dimensional things. It's not like the lungs or the kidneys or the heart. It's something different. They're like operating at a slightly different energetic sort of frequency. But those systems are very well documented and have very real effects. And you can physically stimulate those with your hands and with the energy from your hands. And one technique that we're going to sort of go into tomorrow is going to cover some of that and how you do that using the solar plexus and the bridge portal in the center of your body. And you can begin, today we talked very briefly about this DTI imaging, which shows neural pathways in the brain and how with repeated use those become set and sort of hardwired in. And so part of the thing is that your emotions, strangely enough, have a certain amount of punch in how that's going to happen, essentially. And if it feels good, you think, yeah, we'll give it a go, we'll do some rewiring. And if it feels bad, you think, oh, it's just too weird, I don't want to do it, I'll just have some nachos instead or whatever. And people just like switch over and do something totally different. And that is what people do, right? So you have to say, well, let's create a bridge between the mind and the spirit and the emotions and understand that actually these things aren't working against each other. They're trying to work together. So it is important to understand that principle of woundedness. And as I've discussed recently, all wounds are passed on. So one of the reasons people aren't capable of dealing with emotional wounds is because they usually attribute blame to it, like somebody did something to you, which they may well have done. If you understand that all wounds are passed on and that what's really being passed on is human pain in its core, then you can sort of relinquish the person's responsibility, if whether your father or mother passed on an ignorant thing that caused pain or even a damaging thing that caused pain. You can start to move away from that and think, actually, it wasn't their fault because someone passed it on to them, his or her grandfather. And actually, it was their father and their mother. And you go back and back and back and realize that that original wound actually goes back an incredibly long way. And you realize that as spiritual conscious beings, part of our job is to stop passing on that woundedness and say, well, if I can do something of great value, it might not be a painting or a book or a music album. It could be simply to make the act of will to say, I am not passing on woundedness from me anymore. That stops with me. So I'm going to discuss that in detail tomorrow because there are some practical aspects which are perhaps a little tricky over the radio. But yeah, that particular emphasis on emotions is good because we discussed today, you know, part of my formulation of what I call the inner work, which is part of the larger unfoldment, is purification. And if you can't clear your emotions and discharge them,
you kind of like always carrying around this static, which makes it very difficult to express new emotions with new people and to flow that. And when you do meet something that's healing, if you're still carrying a wound, you can't connect with it. It propels you like two magnets, you know, the minus and the minus. You put them together and they repel each other. So that's an issue. So I'm going to discuss that. I'm also going to discuss something that I have mentioned, I think, previously, perhaps on this very forum, that to some extent, you know, we can look at the techniques people use to avoid doing such work. And in so doing, you can start to identify when you yourself are doing it, when you're displacing and delaying and creating dysfunction and so on. And however intelligent and astute you are, we all do this. So it's good to remind ourselves of that and give us a little bit of compassion for those around us, our friends and family who do it, and actually understand that, yes, you can change it. Yes, you can apply your conscious will to change that, and you have the power to do it. People don't do it simply because they don't know how to. And the mainstream solution is to sedate them and put chemicals into the body to offset that problem, to mitigate it with, you know, a flow of some other chemicals to make people up or down or left or right. That's not the answer. That doesn't go to the root of it. So, yeah, there is some very practical things that one can do in that respect. And it's very important to move forward, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And I think we have another fabulous participant whose name I know in this instance is Kate. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Neil.
James, would you like to address a question to Kate?
For Kate? Well, Kate, I would just love to hear about your experience at the ranch and how you're enjoying the workshop.
Oh, my. Well, for me, I think of the ranch as the Shire. I mean, I really think about it like that. I've been here three times. And it feels like such a safe space and just an enchanted place where there's community of like-minded people, where you can share everything about yourself and people don't go blank. They actually have had a similar experience or can add to yours, or it's just so literally heartening. But I also have to say that every time I've been here, I've been challenged to my core. The first time I came, I walked up to register, and I had been corresponding with Pam for Kunlun, and I met her, and she goes, "Oh, hey, I'm so glad you're here. Come on up. We're about to do a clearing." And I was with my husband, who this was his first foray into this environment, the whole, you know, parapolitical ET thing at all. And we get up to the clearing room, and it was like being shot out of a cannon for both of us. Because it's all the presenters and us. Like, what am I doing here? I don't belong here. Oh, my God. And you do the number off people, and I knew that I was going to be called on, and sure enough, Mother Mary needed to do a clearing on me and my husband, and I was like, oh, what is he going to, oh, my, oh. But it was one of my first experiences of actually feeling energy, and I have been searching for that, grasping for it, doing all the wrong things, doing it in my head, being really cerebral about it, and not being able to open my heart and feel energy. And I don't see things, but I've been just studying it, hitting it pretty hard for 10 years, grasping for that glimpse of the other side. And, you know, the second I get here, I'm taken into the upper room, and Mary needs to talk to me. And that was fantastic. And then today or yesterday, after having a great session, a private session with Neil, Pam again called me up to the tilting table or the table, and I thought, which is sitting in front of me right now. And I thought, I said to her, oh, I'm not your person. I'm not the right person. I don't feel that. I can't ground this. I can't do this. And she goes, yes, you can. All you have to do is be yourself. And after my session with Neil, he gave me permission, and I trusted that that could be true, and I could open my heart and just be myself, and it was okay. And my whole body got so hot, like hot, hot, hot. And then an explosion, like a fountain of energy, blew out of the top of my head. it's just so reassuring to know this is real, and this is happening with people all the time, no matter where you are. It was great confirmation that I really needed. But it seems to happen here a lot. This is really sacred space that you've established. And Neil and I doing our work, he brought me into a riverbed right next to your property. And even being in nature scares me sometimes. It seems so real. And so it's a little threatening. But, you know, to have the river, to bring the ground the mystical on earth, to say the river is going to help flow these traumatic emotions or whatever through, and it's going to work, and it will be alchemy that is grounded in this earth, in this life, even though we're dealing with things that seem very ephemeral. It's such a overpoweringly, beautifully comforting experience. The whole environment here is so embracing and loving, and it makes me feel great about the future. Because I feel that a lot of people are being pulled to this kind of community, no matter what it looks like, and that you've created this. I think it's a great model for other communities.
I love what's happened here is that it's pretty spontaneous, and we just let spirit kind of run the show, and we don't know where it's going to go, but it always turns out great.
Doesn't it? And we don't always know what's best for us. And and somebody else does, and you've anchored something here that is very loving and safe. And I want to say about Neil, I've been at this for maybe 20 years, but really seriously for 10, doing the freakiest freak show stuff to the most cerebral. I've just got to read about it. And finally I realized what he was just talking about, I didn't even know we were going to do tomorrow, but that's exactly what I needed. I've been so in my head and not in my heart. And after having so many private sessions and heal me, consult with me, do this, do that, seeking outside help, I finally stopped doing that about a year ago, realizing I wasn't integrating it into myself. I had a lot of knowledge and a lot of intellectual information, but I wasn't doing the work. And for Neil Kramer, with the minute I heard him the first time, I trusted him. And I was like, oh, I need to have a session with him. This was a year ago, and I was like, nope, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to try it myself first. And then when I heard about this conference and that it was going to be here, I knew, oh, no, I have to come do it now, and it's been fantastic. The synergy and the whole milieu is perfect.
Right. I think, you know, my first disclaimer is Mary made me do it. you know, what's funny is that I always tell people, you know, what happens here is between them and spirit, and between them and the masters are their own interconnections that are coming forward. And, you know, we just facilitate that. So it's very important to realize that you're creating this whole scenario, and we're just facilitating that work, but it's just such a wonderful place to do it in here, and the frequencies are so high, it really accelerates the awakening healing process, and the people here, like Neil and others who are very plugged into that energy, just, you know, flow with it, and magic happens.
Yes, and to be able to trust, to go where you're led and trust the universe, and that it is you and the universe co-creating, is a practice for me, and it's so fun to see it playing out, just as you said. Like, yes, you are loved and seen and protected, and you're directing the experience, and because you're doing that and being responsible and sovereign, here's your gift, and what a great gift.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't agree. You know, I had the same thing done to me, and I've been in everybody else's shoes that come up here, and I've had my fetal positions and crying and you know, deep processing, you know, releasing the past and things like that. So So I get excited when people, you know, cry, you know, or they start letting things go and they go into that process, you know. It's like, and I know how the masters feel the same way when we finally start releasing the past and these old wounds and traumas and everything. They're like cosmic cheerleaders. They're just going, yeah, finally, you know. Finally, you're remembering, you know, you're remembering the God within you. And so it's nice to just plug into that unified consciousness, knowing that it is just so vast.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story here, and I'm sure it's just begun, and it's just going to keep unfolding.
Thank you, and thank you so much for sharing your house. I mean, I don't know how many people, everybody listening to this show knows, that this is your actual home, and you open your home to all of these people, and thankfully, in my experience, it's all lovely people who come, but that is really brave and just so loving and welcoming, and thank you. We all feel it and appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it's just in alignment with my soul purpose, and I'm just following that inner guidance, and that's where it's unfolded. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anybody else there that wants to come on, or is Neil hanging around there?
No, I think we're done, James. We've had three great people speaking. So yeah, no, I think we're good. But yeah, I just wanted just to briefly just pick up on what Robert was saying, that emotional side of it is very important, and I think that it's certainly proven to me that to some extent it falls upon people, particularly like yourself and myself and those who do similar work to us, for the men to actually do this, because I think if you had a woman's workshop where it was called, you know, emotional fruitfulness, you'd get like 99 women going and one guy if you're lucky. And so to build the emotional work into philosophy and mysticism and the paranormal and all the kind of different interesting things we talk about is part of that tapestry, and I feel personally an obligation to talk about that, because it's been critical in my path in understanding that the emotions play a key role in it, and it isn't all just kind of fluffy nonsense. It's something very, very spiritually alive, and it's very, very important for healing, and it's an ongoing process. It's a moving target. So I always enjoy listening to other men talk about that. You know, you can have faith in what they're saying. You know that they walk in the talk. So to be able to share that with people who listen to you and who kind of, you know, give you the credibility that they know that it's something that you've been through. Because like yourself, James, you know, part of my process has been, you know, kind of jumping on top of the tower and singing for joy and then like curling up in a little ball and, you know, weeping the night away. You have to map those two poles to be able to talk about it. You can't theorize about this thing. You actually have to live it. So that's what's so important about this. And that's why people listen, frankly, because you can always tell somebody who's been through it.
Oh, definitely. You know, we've just got maybe a couple minutes left on the show. So how can people get in touch with you for, you know, any of your marvelous sessions? And I know you've got a book coming out, so maybe you can give the title of your book and when it's going to be available, and maybe how
sure.
people can sign
sure,
up on
thank
some
you, yeah. Well, the website is neilkramer.com, and everything really is available from there. So you can see, you know, various essays and interviews and videos and so on there. In terms of the teaching work or the consultation work, whatever you want to call it, there is a section on there that I think says consultation. And using that kind of neutral language, because teaching can be a little bit of a funny word to use sometimes, but, you know, depending on what you wanted to call it, there's a page on there that will go into detail about what that is and why people come to me and how that works. And there's some testimonials of people I've worked with on there, so you can see what other people feel about it. And yes, thank you. My book is called The Unfoldment, and that is due out in April 2012.
Great. And they just contact you through your website.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be going to the New Living Expo in San Francisco in April 2012 as well. So I'll be, to some degree, using that as an event to talk about my work, and people will be able to see the book there, and there'll be various launches around that time. So yeah, it looks like it's going to be an interesting spring for me.
Well, great. You know, I can't thank you for coming on the show enough. And unfortunately, we're out of time, and I'm looking forward to the other half of tomorrow's workshop.
Yeah, it should be good. Thank you, and thanks to all the people who took part today. Thank you to you all. It's just awesome.
All right. Well, have a great evening.
Okay, you too. Thanks a lot now.
All right. Well, we're signing off. This is Jane Phelan with As You Wish Talk Radio. And watch the skies. That's what we're going out to do. And there's a lot of activity up there, so start paying attention. We're not alone in the universe, and there is help, but we have to initiate it. So let's put the call out and send out a loving, joyous thought to our ultra-dimensional friends, our benevolent ancient ancestors that are returning, and let's do our part here on Earth as well. So anyway, this is James Gillen with As You Wish, signing off. Have a great evening.